Mary Sterrett, True Talk 800 AM.
Would that we could say that to the federal government. Do you know how dependent we are on D.C.? Welcome back. I'm Mary Sterrett. And this afternoon, you're listening to True Talk 800 AM. Well, that's the title of an absolutely fabulous book that I have enjoyed reading. Well, actually, I can't say I've enjoyed reading it. I've gotten so angry at some point. But this pretty much puts everything that I talk about on this program into one volume about just how far-reaching the tentacles of the federal government are. And if you think that your dependence on D.C. is, well, an accident, think again. It's by design. Dependent on D.C. is a book that talks about the rise of the federal control over your life, my life, touches about everything we do. Think about it. Who we hire, who we fire, where we go to school, how and what we drive. Everything about our homes, everything about employment and where we worship and things like that. My guest is Charlotte Twite. She has written this fabulous book. She's a Ph.D. in economics. She's got a law degree from the University of Washington. She's really smart, and as I mentioned yesterday, she likes dogs, too. She's a professor of economics at Boise State University, and she's also a member of the Washington State Bar Association. I don't know how she has time to sleep. Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Boy, where do we begin on this? You point out in your book, right out of the chute, we don't have a clue just how much of our money, of our income, goes to the federal government. You're talking about somewhere around 37-39% of our median income goes to taxes?
Yes, that's right. And I think that really goes to the heart of what I talk about in my book, because one of the reasons that federal officials are getting away with the level of taxation that we're experiencing today is that the whole structure has been designed to make it seem less burdensome than it actually is.
So that, like, we're led to believe that we'll get this, we get these tiny little tax breaks. We're led to believe that's a really big deal. But that's kind of like when the grocery stores inflate the price of a can of beans, and then when they put it on sale, you think you're getting a really big deal.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly so. And most people today, I think, don't even realize what their federal tax burden is because of the federal income tax withholding law that was passed back in 1943. And so I think the situation would be much different if people actually had to write out a check at the end of the year or even on a monthly basis, write a check themselves to the federal government for their taxes rather than, as is the case with most of us, our income taxes are withheld by our employer. So we don't experience that.
Isn't that the point?
Yes, that's the point. And it was very interesting back in 1943 when they passed this law. They told the public that this was strictly for the public's benefit, but it turned out in the congressional hearings, they were very outspoken about the taxes that needed to be, and I quote, fried out of the taxpayers, how they couldn't, quote, get those fellows, that's us, without income tax withholding, and they expected it to increase their tax revenues, which, of course, it did. So
you point out that here we are, not that much more than 200 years ago, we fought a revolutionary war because of the taxation of the British government. It is nowhere near the taxation that we are burdened with today, and yet we're not making the slightest peep about it.
Mm-hmm. I think people have been lulled into complacency, and my book is about how this process has been a bipartisan one, and the techniques that are used both by the right and the left in Congress to get these laws passed, and the upshot is that many people don't even realize that some of these laws exist until they come back to bite them.
All right, there's the Libertarian Party, I believe, in Massachusetts, is working on a ballot initiative to abolish the income tax. Why is it that only 37% of the people there are backing this, according to polls? Wouldn't you think that this would be the kind of initiative that everybody would vote for?
Well, you would like to think so, but in fact, if you look at how the income tax burden is distributed, if you lay out all of the income tax payers by adjusted gross income, the people in the upper 50% of income tax payers pay some 95% of, it's actually over 95% of all the federal income tax, personal federal income taxes paid. Whereas the bottom 50% pay only 4%, you know, around 4% or a little bit over of all of the individual income taxes paid. And so we have set up a situation where the income tax burden is so, is distributed in such a way that many, many people feel themselves to be beneficiaries of the income tax. And so, you know, those people in the lower 50% of adjusted gross income automatically are going to oppose any reduction in income taxes because they consider themselves to be net beneficiaries.
Well, so that makes sense. So then this was by design, and if you can get more people to feel like they're getting some kind of benefits from those rich people because we've got this big class warfare thing going,
right,
then you can get them to go along with the supposition that they've got it coming.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So the idea is on the part of many people, to get the benefits that they can from the central government and push off the costs on other people. And, you know, that the idea of getting benefits without incurring the cost, of course, applies across the spectrum of people.
I was noting that today is the anniversary, 6 years ago today, that the nation's welfare to work law was signed into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a poll here in Portland, and they said that 90% of a random sample of 600 registered voters said that they would prefer Congress spend more money on programs that help people get jobs. You would think that people would, you know, say, okay, you know, welfare, we don't want it. It doesn't work. It just engenders dependence. But why is it that you've got 67% who are saying, expand training, expand whatever it takes to get these people to get jobs. And very few people are saying, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. We could probably talk about that topic for about 4 hours. but one answer to it is I see, and many people have noted this, a change over time in people's ideologies. So nowadays, it seems that people's first resort, you mention any problem whatsoever, and their first resort is to the federal government. Well, the federal government ought to do something about this. Whereas, in fact, the founders of our country set up the Constitution in such a way that the federal government wasn't supposed to be able to do just anything it wanted to do, to intervene in any economic activity, however local. So, there have been constitutional changes that have occurred just by the Supreme Court making a decision interpreting the Constitution. They've avoided the amendment process, which would be, you know, it's hard to get an amendment passed. And so what they do oftentimes is to change the meaning of the Constitution just by interpreting it differently. So that's one thing that's gone on. And another thing that's gone on, of course, is the educational process through our public schools, our government schools. There's been a big influence on the content of the educational materials. And so more and more people come out of the school system believing that these types of programs are right and good, and that government should be doing all manner of things that it was never originally constitutionally empowered to do.
All right, so let me just ask you something about a faith-based initiative where we say let's give money to various religious organizations because they're going to get into the social services thing and they'll be able to do a better job. How do you think that's going to perhaps foster more dependence?
At the state level?
Well, at the state level, at the federal level, are we going to see more dependence as a result of the faith-based initiative?
Well, I think one concern is that if you have governments channeling money, governments at any level, federal or state, channeling money into religious organizations, that our experience in the past has been that controls come with that. So I think that's a valid concern.
All right. I'm sure that when you started looking into this, you came up with a point at which this became actually, you know, definable. We could see when it began or when it started, the process started. We weren't always like this, were we?
No, we weren't. At the beginning of our country, of course, there were many intrusive local regulations that existed, but not the state and federal interventions that we have now. What I did in my book, Dependent on D.C., is I started out wanting to examine the government programs that reach the lives of every American and control the lives of every American. And so I just decided that those key fields were Social Security and income tax withholding and public education laws, health laws, database laws, those sorts of things. And then I traced those back to their roots. So my story picks up in the early 1900s.
That far back, huh?
Yeah, it's been, you know, the Social Security law, for example, was put into effect, passed into law, that is, in 1935. And so that's the first major law that I look at and trace its origins back and so on.
Boy, you know, you tend to think of this as something that, well, maybe it started in the 60s, maybe it started in the 70s, but this is really, I guess you can't take it, you can't turn a ship around, you know, it just doesn't happen. It takes a long time, it takes a lot of sort of manipulation of ideology to get people to go along with it.
Let's
take a break then and come back. I want to talk about Social Security because, again, this is a Ponzi scheme. This is one of those things that makes absolutely no sense, yet we're so co-opted into believing that the government's going to take care of us in our old age, and it really is just ridiculous. Our guest is the author of Dependent on D.C., The Rise of Federal Control Over the Lives of Ordinary Americans, Professor Charlotte Flight will continue with us when we come back here on True Talk 800 AM on Mary Sarrett.
Charles Funeral Chapel have been helping families throughout the greater Portland area for the past 36 years. You can trust their caring staff of professionals to put your needs above everything else as they guide your family through difficult times. When a loved one passes away, you don't always have the time or emotional energy to research funeral homes. They'll be happy to come to your home, put you in touch with health groups, or offer details on pre-need funeral plans. Leonard and Gloria Attrell and their staff will be there with professional advice, strength, and encouragement. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Don't wait to choose a funeral home and risk making the wrong choice. Attrell's Funeral Chapel. In Sherwood, call 503-625-6515. In Newburgh, call 503-538-2191. Caring is their profession at Attrell's Funeral Chapel.
4.5%. That's right. Agape Home Mortgage is proud to announce an exclusive best interest rate of 4.5%. This incredible adjustable rate mortgage is perfect for someone looking for an extra low payment now and planning on moving or refinancing in 3 to 5 years. The 4.5% is locked in for 3 years and becomes a 1-year adjustable rate mortgage after that. Don't miss your chance to take advantage of 4.5% interest with an APR of only 5.29%. This is a limited-time offer available exclusively through Agape's Best Interest Rate Program. Call Agape today at 503-243-LOAN to lock in. Remember, there's no fee to get pre-approved, and you can save an additional $250 by applying online at Agape's website, fastapproval.com. Agape Home Mortgage, where you'll find the best interest rate. Call 503-243-LOAN. That's 503-243-LOAN.
True Talk. Listen for Dr. Steve. Weekdays 11 a.m. till noon on True Talk 800 a.m.
As a pastor, my congregation is probably the employees. And I try to give them direction in a very positive, godly manner.
Jerry G. is the general manager at Alexander's, a pastor and former Bible teacher.
Alexander's is a different attitude than most dealerships in that we do try to take care of our customers. We are the most honored dealer of all kind with Chrysler Corporation, and that comes because we have a group of people that care.
Right now, Alexander's is able to offer you rebates up to $3,000 or 0% financing on all minivans excluding the EX model. Alexander's Chrysler has been recognized as the most honored dealership in the nation. Come by and see why, but don't wait too long. While Alexander's award-winning service will last forever, $3,000 rebates or 0% financing is only for a limited time. Alexander's Chrysler, 24th and Northeast Sandy. Think about acres of beautiful top-quality plants, shrubs, and trees in all varieties and sizes. Then visualize expertly trained personnel to answer your gardening and landscape questions. Get the picture? Now imagine paying for this full-service nursery experience at warehouse prices. Owners and KPDQ listeners Barry and Ryan invite you to come visit the new Twin Oaks Nursery. They're filling in the void left by the closing of Midland Farms. So make your list and come out and save on everything from bedding flowers around the house to full-grown trees or instant neighbor screens. Professional landscapers will save with competitive wholesale prices as well. To get there, just take Shoals Ferry Road 10 miles west of Washington Square to the blinking yellow light. Then, follow the signs to the new Twin Oaks Nursery. And for a limited time, if you mention this ad, as a KPDQ listener, you'll receive an additional 10% off your entire first-time purchase. For more information, call Twin Oaks Nursery, 503-628-1667. Get old-fashioned prices at the new Twin Oaks Nursery.
Shining a light on truth, justice, and the American dream. All for 6 1/4 an hour. Mary Scarry, True Talk 800 AM.
Government is big on surveillance of ordinary Americans, you and me, and since September 11th, it's only gotten worse. Welcome back. This is True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sterrett. Our guest is the author of the book Dependent on D.C., The Rise of Federal Control Over the Lives of Ordinary Americans. She is Professor Charlotte Twite. She is has a Ph.D. in economics. She has a law degree from the University of Washington, and she's a professor of economics at Boise State University. Professor, tell me a little bit about the surveillance of ordinary Americans, just what it spans.
I think I could summarize it by saying that essentially today we all as individuals are under the microscope of the federal government. There are databases that have been mandated by the central government covering our financial affairs. Our employers have to create databases about us. The schools create databases about us, and now even our doctors are required to create databases about us. And some of these things, the federal government wants to pretend that they're decentralized, but of course, when these databases are in electronic form, they can be brought together at the click of a mouse.
Mm-hmm. Everything from our financial transactions, I mean, just how invasive is that aspect?
Well, I've been worried about this since 1970. Clear back in 1970, a law was passed that, you know, it sounded pretty innocent. It was called the Bank Secrecy Act.
Mm.
But what that law did was...
Know your customer, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It required every bank to make a photocopy or other record of every single check that you write. Well, ultimately, they said, well, you know, we'll, as a practical matter, we'll only make copies of the checks that are for $100 or more. But the fact of the matter is the law requires that kind of surveillance of all of us. So that they put it into place at that time. They've been doing nothing but making it stronger. As you mentioned, the Know Your Customer rules that they keep pushing to make stronger and stronger. So in our financial transactions, we're under the microscope as we are in those other areas that I mentioned a minute ago.
After September 11th, I think we saw this become even, these rules become even more draconian. How bad have things gotten since September 11th, and where do you see this, the natural extension of this?
Things have gotten a lot worse since September 11th because, as has been the case historically, whenever there's some emergency situation, some crisis, in this case, the war on terror, then people in government who've been wanting expansions of federal power for years used that as a rationale to sort of throw in the kitchen sink and get all these new government expanding measures put into place. And they continue to use the types of strategies that I document in my book. For example, one of the big new laws that everybody has heard about is the law that's called the USA Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what a lot of people don't know is that title, in fact, ARC is an acronym. So our congressmen and senators sat around in a room someplace, and they figured out what would be a list of words where the acronym would be USA Patriot. So they, are you ready for this? They came up with Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. So the acronym is USA Patriot, and then once it became the USA Patriot Act, then nobody could vote against it. You know, it would seem unpatriotic for a congressperson to vote against it. So in that law, they were able to put in a lot of provisions that threaten our privacy, that require and allow a lot more surveillance of people without the normal protections that people have had historically. And there are other bills as well. There was an Aviation Transportation Act that was put into place proposing to set up the establishment of trusted traveler programs.
Mm-hmm.
And, now we've got the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act that has been suggested by the Centers for Disease Control to be enacted by all the different states. And that would actually allow a governor to set up essentially martial law.
Well, I think when we say martial law, a lot of people would say we're already living under martial law. But I don't think people understand that the Model States Emergency Health Powers Act essentially gives a governor the right to quarantine people,
yes,
to confiscate their goods, to confiscate their home. There's even a provision in this to burn down a residence. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you just say, whoa, no thank you. This is not Cuba.
Yeah, and also in that law, the requirement that doctors give treatments to patients that are ordered by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And if the doctor refuses to do it, then his license to practice can be taken away.
Yeah.
So it's just, everybody should go out on the web and read this law, because I think some 16 states or so have already adopted one version or another of it, and it's being considered in all the many, many states across the land.
The forced inoculations, and of course we know that some of the inoculations that they're considering, like smallpox, are just hideously dangerous. The side effects are so horrific. And we hear about what they can do. In other words, they can herd you into quote-unquote stadiums. Well, you know, thank you very much. I'll stay home if I've got, you know, smallpox.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's astonishing to see what's going on, and also astonishing to see how few people are really aware.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, everybody's just sitting on the couch watching American Idol or Fear Factor or reruns of Third Rock from the Sun. That's what they're all doing.
Mm-hmm. And I think they've been lulled into complacency because they've got good jobs and nice families, and really they're doing good things in the sense of people who are taking care of their children and doing a good job at their place of employment. And they just don't realize what's coming down on us.
No, I think the thing is that, you know, people might be taking care of their kids today, and that, of course, is debatable, but they're not watering the tree. They're not watering the tree of liberty, and they're not taking care of their kids' liberty in the future. One of the things that we need to take into consideration when we talk about kids' future is the economics surrounding the Social Security system. If you were to save money, and if you were to leave something for your kids, you could then hand that over, of course, the death tax notwithstanding. But with Social Security, you pay so much into it, and when you die, you don't get to leave any of that. It goes away. You don't get to leave that to your kids. Tell me about Social Security and that whole scheme.
Well, you described it correctly, and I think it is a very bad thing, especially for poor people, because, as you say, they're not going to be able to leave that money to their children. And I did some calculations for the book showing that even people who are earning just a minimum wage job, you know, that type of salary for their working life, would have a substantial amount of money to leave to their children if they were allowed to put it into a savings vehicle that made it actually their money and not the government's money. So Social Security is really a bad deal for everybody, but especially for poor people, for women, for minorities, and other groups of that sort. I think one of the things that offends me the most about Social Security is that they continue to try to trick people into believing that they have a Social Security tax that is only half of what it actually is in terms of the burden on them. We all know that we're told that half of the taxes paid by our employers and half by us. But in economic terms, I as an employee bear the entire burden of the Social Security tax or very close to it in the form of reduced wages. So I am bearing the employer's half of the Social Security tax because my employer would just as soon pay me the money if they didn't have, my employer did not have to pay the government the money, right? So we're tricked into thinking that we bear a 6.2% tax where, in fact, it's closer to a 12.4% tax that I as an individual bear.
Well, it's kind of like the semantics that's around, ooh, when my tax refund comes, I'm getting money back from the government. And I always laugh when I hear that, and I think, you idiot, did you see what you paid out?
Exactly. So they want to hide what we pay out, and they've been very effective with that, with income tax withholding and Social Security withholding and, you know, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing. It's smoke and mirrors. All right, we've got just a few more minutes with our guest. She is Professor Charlotte Twite. She's written the book Dependent on D.C. It's a St. Martin's Press book. We'll talk to her a little bit more when we come back. We'll talk about health care controls and just how vulnerable we are there when we go visit the doctor. Be careful what you tell your doctor, the nice man in the white coat. When we come back, we'll talk about that and more. This afternoon, you're tuned in to True Talk 800 AM. I'm Mary Sarrett, and parts of the show sponsored by Harry Ritchie's Jewelers and Ron Tonkinisa. We have more True Talk on the way, and at True Talk, we are your Portland home for Michael Medved, your cultural crusader. Catch his daily show from 4 until 7 here on True Talk 800 AM. Michael Medved, 4 until 7 every weekday on True Talk.
Before seeing Dr. Bob Skoloski, Jeannie had suffered from fatigue.
Before I saw Dr. Bob, I was in bed, sleeping most of my life away. Extreme exhaustion. Memory loss was probably one of the biggest. Muscle and joint pain. Really feeling that your mind was gone or my mind was gone was very scary. And knowing that there was no cure, that hopelessness and dread that came in. But after the Lord led me to Dr. Bob, and right away, I'd say within a month, the program Dr. Bob put me on changed my whole life. Got me up out of my bed. I can get up and live my world again. So it's really a blessing. I feel that God has given Dr. Bob an insight. I call him the miracle worker.
If you or someone you love is suffering, call Dr. Bob Skoloski now at 503-654-3938 because helping you get well is all that matters. Dr. Bob Skoloski, naturopathic physician, 503-654-3938, 654-3938.
Terry knows firsthand the pain of losing someone addicted to drugs and alcohol. About 8 years ago, Terry lost her husband to HIV related to drug use. Her husband had gone from being a loving, caring partner in marriage and life to a distant, selfish drug addict in just a few short years. As he slipped into a personal hell, which Terry could never understand, she stood by her husband watching the man she loved wither away and die. Now you might think that would make Terry a bitter woman, but it didn't. Rather, it made Terry passionate about supporting Teen Challenge. Teen Challenge helps adult men and women overcome their addictions through the power of Jesus Christ. As a faith-based ministry, Teen Challenge receives no government support and yet has grown to help so many through the generous support of people like Terry. People who know firsthand the pain of loving and sometimes losing someone through addiction. Won't you join Terry and others by supporting Teen Challenge? Call 503-230-1910 today and ask for a free informative video to get acquainted with this powerful charitable effort. Help them to help others. 503-230-1910. For confidentiality reasons, Terry is not her real name.
Your home for the True Talk Story Hour with Odyssey and Focus on the Family Radio Theater. Saturday nights at 7 on True Talk 800 AM.
Get connected with FreeUp, the better way to prepay from Verizon Wireless. Get set up with a great Kyocera phone for only $69.99 after $30 mail-in rebate with $15 worth of prepaid minutes and 200 bonus weekend minutes. Hey, if you're already hooked up with FreeUp, we'll throw in 200 bonus weekend minutes every time you re-up with $50 or more. So join in and FreeUp only at Verizon Wireless.
Subject to terms of prepaid service agreement, the $35 activation fee may apply. Package price $99.99. Restrictions apply.
Angela, did you hear about the Oxy Instant Win Game?
Of course.
You can win an
iPhone camera.
Or a Dell.
Computer.
Just get some Oxy and go to
OxyOxygen.com to play.
Did you know that Oxy unclogs pores and
works with oxygen to fight pimples?
Well, did you know that?
Yes.
What about this?
Yes.
Well, that's all.
Yes, take it.
Think Oxy, think Oxygen. Go to OxyOxygen.com for free entry details and rules. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited. Must be a U.S. resident 13 or older to play. Promotion ends October 15, 2002. Use as directed.
If you've been looking for an easy and effective way to provide good nutrition for yourself and your family, look no further. Sea Silver is a pleasant-tasting liquid vitamin that contains virtually every vitamin and mineral known to man in perfect balance with nature. It is truly a foundational health program. What that means to you is Sea Silver balances your body chemistry, cleanses your vital organs, purifies your blood, nourishes, oxygenates, protects your body against toxins, and strengthens your immune system. With Sea Silver, 95 to 98% of its nutrients get to your body's cells, compared to just 2 to 20% for vitamin pills. You'll feel the difference. To order Sea Silver, call 800-611-1967. That's 800-611-1967. One bottle, which is 1 month's supply, is just $39.95. And Sea Silver pays the shipping and handling. Three bottles is just $100, saving you $40. Sea Silver is guaranteed, so you have nothing to lose. Call 800-611-1967.
Back to Mary Garrett on True Talk 800 AM.
Don't come around here no more.
Would that we could say that to the powers that be at the federal level, but, well, maybe we can. Maybe we're just not doing it. Welcome back. I'm Mary Starrett. You're listening to True Talk 800 AM. My guest is Dr. Charlotte Plight. She's written the book Dependent on D.C., The Rise of Federal Control Over the Lives of Ordinary Americans. One of the things that, Dr. Twight points out is that we have basically relinquished private control when it comes to our health care, and I don't think we realize just how invasive that is. Charlotte, tell me a little bit about just how insidious that control is.
Well, it started clear back with the passage of the Medicare law in 1965. That law was put into place saying that the reason for it was that it would provide coverage for catastrophic illness of old people, and that was not the case. The bill, none of the bills being considered had catastrophic coverage in it. There was this one fantastic comment by Senator Russell Long at the time. He was talking to the HEW, Health, Education, and Welfare Secretary, and he said, this is a quote, "Well, in arguing for your plan, you say, let's not strip poor old grandma of the last dress she has and of her home and what little resources she has. And you bring us a plan that does exactly that unless she gets well in 60 days. So that's just a sample of the type of misrepresentation that got the government into health care to begin with. And, of course, they proceeded incrementally, and in 1996 there was a new law put into place, probably a lot of your listeners know, about the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And always there's this nice-sounding name, like these wonderful things are going to happen, but tucked into that law in a little tiny section at the end, it was called Administrative Simplification. And so, you know, people pretty much skipped over that part. But it contained requirements for standardized electronic databases of personal medical information nationwide. So all the records will be in the same form, so it'll be real easy to centralize this information when the government wants to. It required unique health identifiers for every American, and of course the law had just enormous new civil and criminal penalties that could be applied to doctors, even ones who were just trying to do the right thing for their patients and might have a disagreement with the bureaucrats about what's the proper treatment for the patient. So, and the latest round, of course, is the so-called privacy regulations that were supposed to protect us from all this new intrusive data that's being collected about us. But the privacy regulations, I've read every page, and I would call them anti-privacy regulations. The newest revisions have no consent requirement for when you give your doctor information for your treatment, and they have information about the treatment that they've given you and what you've said to them and so on. There's no consent requirement for the disclosure of that information. And basically, government agencies can get their hands on this information and share it amongst themselves. And the sad part is that most people don't understand that they are absolutely losing their medical privacy, and it will hurt their health care because they'll be scared eventually to give information to their doctors, and it jeopardizes other aspects of their lives as government officials can abuse this information. And, you know, suppose somebody runs for office and somebody else is perusing their medical records to find something that they can use in a negative way against them.
You know, isn't this even worse than what Clinton had proposed?
Worse than the original Health Security Act proposed that?
Yeah, I think this is just a little bit more draconian from what I've been able to figure out.
Well, some of the structures, the bureaucratic structures and centralization of healthcare, those things have not been put into law. But I think on this branch of it that we're talking about, with the databases and all of that, that's it's at least as bad as what they originally envisioned. And one of the things that was shocking to me when I went through the 1996 law was the worst part, this administrative simplification part, was literally copied out of the Hillary Care bill, the Clinton's bill. I mean, and I went through and documented each place where it was just copied. And yet, although people, you know, resoundingly rejected that bill in 1993, in 1996, they just looked the other way, didn't pay any attention because the worst parts were tucked into this little provision called administrative simplification. So it's pretty shocking, and I think people better wake up soon.
All right, so the purpose of writing the book is to what? To get us to wake up, to get us to do something about it. What can we do at this point?
I think what people can do is to inform themselves about what's happened in the past, what's happening now, and there are many ways to do that. I mean, there are various think tanks around that have a perspective that is congenial to getting that information. There's the Independent Institute, there's the Cato Institute, and just to read a lot, become more informed about these issues. But it's tough because the system has been structured to make things seem painless and to cause people not to pay any attention. So you've really got to be motivated to do the things that you need to do to become informed and to play a more active political role.
You said that this is bipartisan. Certainly we can't blame one party or the other. They're both complicit in this. So if that's the case, then what are our options? Do we go third party and call it good?
Well, again, if you, when people read my Chapter 9, they're going to see that I'm not terribly optimistic about things right now. I go through all of the arguments about what is going to lead us out of this, and I'm really worried that we're not headed in a good direction now, and part of the reason, of course, is the public schools with the government influence that we have there. I think more and more people have accepted what I call an ideology of dependence, where, you know, they think there's no stigma attached to this. This is okay. I'm doing okay. It hasn't hurt me yet,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's going to hurt them eventually if people don't become more aware and decide to oppose some of these things.
This is sort of a form of slavery. I think that when you don't have your freedom, you don't have the freedom to make choices. We can think that we're free because we're getting all these quote-unquote bennies, but we're really not. How do you break people from that cycle of dependency or that cycle of thinking that we're getting something for nothing? Is it a matter of going right to the core of this, which is perhaps where kids are educated, and saying, I don't want my kid indoctrinated in the government schools. The only way we're going to break this pattern is to yank them out of the government schools and to teach them the right way.
Mm-hmm. I think two big pieces of the puzzle are the public schools, and if people take their children out of public schools, I think that's a good thing. It'll give them more control over what their children learn. And if they're trying to bring up their children in an ideology of liberty, an ideology that doesn't involve dependence on government, they'll have more ability to do that. And another important piece is to work very hard to get the tax structure changed so that we don't have income tax withholding. I think things would change overnight if we didn't have income tax withholding and people actually had to write out checks to the government on a monthly or annual basis, in any form, actually writing out the check to the government rather than having them extract the money ahead of time, I think would be tremendously therapeutic in terms of our political economy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if instead of you just get the check that you're used to getting, you don't look at that amount, if you have to write a check every month or every week or every year for this big honking amount, you'd be saying, I don't think so.
Yeah, what am I getting back for that?
Yeah. But again, we don't see anybody in either party who supports this kind of stuff. They just don't.
Yeah, and you can understand why, because our legislators and other federal officials are profiting from the fact that we don't notice exactly how much they're taking. Then they can support all these fine-sounding programs and, some of the ones that you described before, and everybody feels very grateful, oh, you're going to do this wonderful thing and I'm going to get this benefit from it. So it's a difficult thing to turn around, I think, because of the interests that are profiting by this type of arrangement.
Well, you've given us some great ammunition, and I think this is a book that you might want to just buy and hand to somebody who doubts that we're on this road to serfdom. The name of the book is called Dependent on D.C., and the author is Charlotte Twight. It's T-W-I-G-H-T. It's available at all the usual .coms, and St. Martin's Press is the publisher, and I'm sure it's in all the bookstores. It really is a fascinating read. It's kind of everything we talk about on the show in one book. If that can be this particular book, is it. Professor, I appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alrighty, take care.